Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
You're listening to Kaya Biz here on Kaya 959. The last 20 minutes of the show, and as you can tell, as we're winding off this week, we really are leaving it on a much lighter note as we take a look at the business aspects of sports, not only in South Africa, as we touched on a moment ago, but now going to focus on the global stage. Real Madrid, a soccer team that comes all the way out of Madrid in Spain, has taken the crown as the world's most valuable football club brand. The brand is actually said to be worth 1.7 billion euros in terms of its brand value. That's just over 33 billion rand, and is the first club to actually exceed making 1 billion euros in revenue in one financial year. This is significant. And to contextualize it, there are banks, there are businesses and institutions that are typically listed on the equity space in Europe that aren't even worth this much or don't even create this kind of revenue in one financial year. So there's clearly something that's working within the secret sauce of business for Real Madrid, including a few other teams that also feature on the list, such as Manchester City. And of course, what we do see in terms of, Manchester United and opposing teams like Barcelona FC there. So let's get some perspective on this. And for that, we're joined by Hugo Hensley, Head of Sports Services at Brand Finance. Hugo, a warm welcome to Kaya Biz from South Africa, and appreciate your perspective and time this evening, sir.
Hi, thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
A delight to touch base with you. And I assume you might have heard the tail end of the conversation we heard or had with our South African guest, who gave us a more local perspective on the business of sports and sponsorship specifically in South Africa. But I'm keen to get your thoughts on revenue models or business models and how they've evolved specifically when it comes to sporting codes, or rather football, in terms of generating sustainable revenue and building successful businesses.
Yeah, I think he touched on absolutely all the right points. It's sort of three main revenue streams that we see around the world, and it's the balance of them that differs between markets. So you've got match day revenue, so ticketing and your hot dogs and your beers that you're selling. You've got commercial revenue, which includes your merchandising and your sponsorships, and then the broadcasting revenue. And any differences that you see in the models between markets are usually based on a different balance between these. So when we did our valuation of the world's top football brands this year, we saw that the Premier League held the most value in the world. And that's primarily driven by their massive broadcasting contracts, which they share very evenly between the clubs, creating a really competitive league. But the most branded revenue stream for a club is, of course, sponsorship. It's businesses wanting to align with those brands, and so paying them the big bucks to get the name on the shirt or to be able to promote their brand next to it on social media and the like. And that's where we see brands like Real Madrid dragging in the most sponsors, because they've got the strongest brands.
And let's talk about that, because clearly they had to start with a very strong brand, winning as many leagues, cups, trophies as possible in order to become the most valuable football brand in the world. What's their secret sauce?
It is a bit of a secret sauce, but it's also sort of wide open to see. It's what they've developed is this virtuous cycle of delivering on pitch performance, creating a really attractive product to watch that brings in the viewership, both on TV and in the stadium, and then through that they can attract big sponsorship contracts, big broadcasting deals, and that money allows them to buy the best players. Coming round to the top of the cycle, better on pitch performance because they've got the best players, and that allows them to deliver that sustained value that means that they stay at the top. They're achieving success not just on the pitch, but also when we look at teams that are fans are rating as the most innovative, the strongest heritage, even factors like delivering the best positive effect in the community. Real Madrid are scoring right at the top for a lot of these metrics in fans' perceptions.
Fans also love superstars, right? And football stars. And when we see phenomenal signings, as we've recently seen with Kylian Mbappe, who's now moving to Real Madrid at a significant cost, this naturally plays into that business model and how it is that the club itself looks to add value. And of course, through the investment of the player, see a return on investment.
Yeah, I think when you see these numbers, like for Kylian Mbappe, it's hard to believe how that they can be getting a return on investment. But a player like that will deliver through sort of all different revenue streams. Yes, they increase the on-pitch performance. That's pretty obvious. They'll sell a lot of shirts. Of course, you can quite easily imagine the revenue that comes in that way. But also it's that they attract the wider audiences. And again, bringing those top-tier revenue streams that your previous guest was talking about, broadcasting and sponsorship deals. They're going to get that big viewership. That's what the sponsors want, so that they can get in front of as big an audience as possible. And so that player brings that sort of long-term value to the club through the big brands, the right brands with the money to spend, wanting to align with it. The other thing we see is you get some of these flagship players delivering beyond that. So I'm based in London, where we have Tottenham Hotspur with their sort of star player, Heung-min Son, and he brings a massive Asian audience to the club. They, if you go to a game, you'll find hundreds of Korean fans all wearing their Son shirts, having spent huge amounts of money to come over to watch the games. And that attracts sponsors from a different part of the world. And so these players can actually have these outsized effects if they allow access to a different audience or a particular sponsorship alignment. So Son is known as very friendly. And so sponsors want to align with that compared to some other players that might be seen as high quality, prestigious. And so you might have a different type of sponsor, perhaps luxury brands wanting to align with them. And so when clubs sign these players, they're definitely thinking about that as a value driver and the return on investment, the other side of the equation to the massive salaries and signing bonuses that we read about.
And speaking of those players, I do want to understand if pitch performance is everything. And I ask this specifically because of the varying performances we have seen from the likes of Manchester City versus a Real Madrid in terms of brand value. Does that play any influence at all?
It has a massive influence. Unsurprisingly, one of the fastest growing brands over the last 10 years is Manchester City. Their continued success has sort of, I guess, finally beaten down a lot of the haters who said, they're not a club with heritage. They can't do this. And actually, they've seen them playing exciting football, which is a great attribute that brands will want to align to and that everyone wants to watch on TV, whatever you think of the club, and have shown that they can actually build a strong brand. But there is a lot more than on-pitch performance. And it's developing a strong brand that has some of those attributes outside of the immediate fan perceptions of star players and scoring a lot of goals. But those things like community engagement, like being seen as environmentally responsible, being seen as sustainably governed, being seen as innovative and strong heritage, that allow these top clubs that have those brand attributes to weather storms or dips in performance. So Liverpool Football Club is a great example that has a very strong tie to the local community, is regularly in our research seen as one of the most sustainable, and it has a huge huge value that it gains from that, with partners wanting to align with those specific attributes. And that means that in seasons where on-pitch performance dips and maybe they're not playing in the Champions League and receiving the big bucks from that, they actually can keep hold of those sponsors and keep attracting broadcasting and sponsorship revenue because they've got that brand that remained strong throughout those periods. And so it's a mix of both. Yes, on-pitch performance can help build the brand, but for the long term and for that resilience, you need more than that. And that's what we see those really top, strongest in the world brands achieving.
Definitely. And as you say, it is something of significance in terms of their growth and performance. And I do see the top five certainly feature Manchester City, Manchester United, and of course, Liverpool. I mention this deliberately because these are all soccer teams or football teams that happen to be based in the UK. You happen to be based in London. And my general next question would obviously be just an understanding of how much this particular sport in terms of football does contribute to the UK economy as entities, as businesses, and I guess the ripple effects that we typically do see there.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at the actual numbers and sort of the revenues that it brings in through ticketing and sponsorship and broadcasting. I mean, the Premier League broadcasting deals are worth, I think 10 billion now in pounds. So that's a huge amount. But the the real value and when the numbers start getting seeming to sound crazy is that the Premier League being a global media property is a huge advert for the United Kingdom. People come to visit and they make sure that they get a ticket to a game, that they can see something. People who don't visit the UK perhaps are more likely to buy products for the UK, see it as more a more positive place to deal with, to trade with. People are more likely to come and study if they know a bit more about the country. They think they know a bit more about the culture. People are more likely to invest in the UK and UK businesses if they feel more familiar. They feel like they understand the culture and the heritage, and they feel this connection to perhaps a part of the country through a Premier League team that you follow. And so the UK economy is boosted on a much larger scale than just fans spending on whether it's TV subscriptions, buying the products that the sponsors are putting in front of them, or buying tickets to games. There's a lot more value that can be created just beyond that. That directly related football revenue. And that's what these sort of prestige properties around the world do. And you see in South Africa, it's probably the rugby team at the moment that's the standout there that creates a lot of positive perceptions around the country. And we see in our market research that if you look at what people think of a country, people who enjoy sports think much more positively about South Africa and New Zealand and some other countries that are known for their, and Brazil, known for their sporting heritage than general public who don't follow sports. And that's not just, I think they're a successful country. I think they enjoy the same things as me, but they'd be seen as having better infrastructure. They'd be seen as having better educational institutions. And that's because these positive perceptions that they've got from these sports alignments can be brought all the way across onto perceptions of the whole country, and that can really boost the economy well beyond the business of sport.
Definitely. And I find it so intriguing because we're obviously seeing and witnessing a bit of an evolution now in terms of the football, the future of football branding, right? There's technology involved. There's fan engagement that's constantly evolving. And it does seem as though football clubs do need to adapt or evolve their branding strategies in order to meet the changing needs and demands of supporters. What's your view on that?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And the technology is enabling a lot of it. With more and more people watching online, watching through streaming services, sponsors can understand exactly where fans are being exposed to different properties. They can actually change the sponsors that appear on the billboards around the pitch to suit different viewers in different markets, and that allows a stronger effectiveness of the sponsorship. So it's more likely to be recognized, the brand's more likely to be remembered, people are more likely to consider the product, they're more likely to bring positive associations to it. And so technology and fan engagement are sort of growing hand in hand. I think what we'll see in the future is more of this internationalization, as you see these top sporting properties like the Premier League, like La Liga, the Champions League in Europe, pulling further away from the others as they're able to develop these technologies, attract more and more sponsors from around the world who can do better targeting. And unfortunately, it might leave some of those smaller players sort of scrabbling for sponsorships and broadcasting deals when those major properties sort of take over the world.
So important. But if you've just joined us, we are in conversation with Hugo Hensley, Head of Sports Services at Brand Finance. And we really are reflecting on the most valuable football clubs in the world in terms of their brand and brand value. Obviously, the likes of Real Madrid certainly topping the list there, of course, followed by Manchester City, Barcelona, and of course, Manchester United and Liverpool also featuring on this list. And it's really giving us some context and a better understanding of the business environment when it comes to sporting codes and the successes that work in their favor. Sponsorship certainly working well, especially from a global level, and making sure that engagement with fans stays top of mind. Hugo, to talk to the examples of perhaps African perspective, I'm keen to get your thoughts as to how far African clubs might be in terms of being behind on catching up to the opportunity to really leverage their brands. And if there are any current, football brands across the continent that you believe might be firing on a few cylinders.
I think there's a huge opportunity. I mean, we see in market research that we do here at Brand Finance, we see massive following of football. It's, I think, 47% of people in the country responded that they follow football to some degree. So it's not a problem of trying to get people involved. I think what they're just trying to hook onto, especially the South African market, is to build up a bit of that virtuous cycle I described that Real Madrid had nailed down. So create an exciting product, exciting games on the pitch that fans are desperate to see, and then create the channels for them to see it. So give more opportunity to attend games at stadiums. Make it easier or more preferable for people to watch the games, and then that will bring in the sponsors as they see that they're reaching an audience. They're attaching themselves to a product that is seen as very positive, very community engaged, and then that will allow more investment in better players, increasing the quality of the on pitch performance, more international players, which expands the viewership into those markets, and then again coming around and increasing viewership again. So it's all about building up that exciting product, which I think the sport definitely can have, as well as enabling those engagement channels. So as you were mentioning in the last guest, losing the broadcasting deal and potentially losing the ability to broadcast can have massive knock on effects on what's possible. And I think it's probably stability in the league and perhaps getting some long-term contracts that allows looking forwards, looking further ahead and trying to develop, that is just the thing that's needed to sort of take the next steps. Because we know that there are some you know, great brands out there that are very strong, and how they differ from your Real Madrids is they're just not driving the same revenue. I'm thinking of Kaiser Chiefs, Orlando Pirates, that have, you know, a lot of heritage, long reputation. They're known in Europe, in South America, around the world as sort of some of the top African club football brands. But what they're not able to connect to is a system that gives them that sort of positive feedback loop that I guess sort of, you know, all boats rise and go up in the rising tide, and you need that league to be competitive, strongly engaged with sort of year round and throughout the league, not just the top teams or the big derbies, and so that you can have the sponsorship, the attendance, and the broadcasting, all three of those key revenue streams driving the sport as a business forwards, but allowing growth that also delivers that positive experience for fans and gets more people engaged more strongly with the sport.
Mm. I'm so glad you mentioned this, because earlier my colleagues were commenting on PR and what a critical role it plays. And it almost seems as though, as you've mentioned, none of these factors can operate in isolation. It's a reinforcing loop that does need to contribute to the growth and sustainability of the businesses. Is that a key area and factor? And perhaps does that also play to finding innovative ways of sponsorship beyond just the logo on a jersey, but finding creative ways that do work for perhaps emerging markets in the world?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think it's creating more interesting touch points and connecting the sponsors' brands to things that people already have very positive perceptions around, right? Their local football club. So sponsorships that are across the league and perhaps can reach each fan through their own team's particular channels. Those are the ones that we see as being most innovative and being most well received and reaching the best audiences. Some partnerships that we've seen being particularly interesting recently are perhaps sponsorships within video games. Mm. So on it used to be called the FIFA video game. I think it's now called EA Sports FC. But you know, when you're playing the game, there's advertising boards around the edge, just like if you're watching a game. And sponsors have realized that they can be displayed on there. And so that's the kind of innovative partnership that we can see coming and engaging with fans, not just on a Saturday or a game day when their team are playing, but actually throughout their engagement with the sport. People can do top to bottom sponsorships where, yes, they sponsor, you know, the team at the top of the league, mm-hmm. but they might also sponsor some grassroots academies. They might also sponsor some, mm-hmm. you know, junior football training or coaching or, you know, connection with school teams in the league, so that people can always connect that sport, that positive feeling to the sponsor and deliver value to them through that way, so that they're more likely to engage positively with those sponsoring brands.
Sure. Hugo, such phenomenal insight you've shared with us. I'm tempted to tease you and put you on the spot and ask you which South African football brand is your favorite. I'm teasing. You don't have to answer.
I had a Mamelodi Sundowns shirt that my dad, I might be saying that wrong, that my dad bought me when I was a kid, and I loved the bright shirt. So so that's sort of my alignment, but I can't say I know how they're doing doing these days.
Oh, financially, I think commercially a lot better than many of the other brands. So I think you're on the money there. And a lot of our listeners might be happy to hear about who you support. So thank you for that. I hope you still wear your T-shirt and it still fits.
It does not. It's probably for about a 10-year-old. I think I've still got it in a cupboard at home, though, because I can't throw that away.
Ah, got you. Certainly not. Certainly not. Such a pleasure speaking to you this evening, sir. Really appreciate this information and insight you've shared with us. And, you know, making the business of football a lot more accessible and easier for us to understand.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been fun.
Thank you, Hugo. That's Hugo Hensley. He's the head of sports services at Brand Finance. As we've been distilling business of brands, essentially, especially when it comes to football and how certain clubs have been a lot more sustainable and successful than others in terms of the most valuable brands, the most strongest brands, and of course some lessons we can learn as South Africa in terms of making sure that our football brands are viable business entities.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.